Curtis was not the real name of the jeweler in Dallas. Curtis worked fine when corresponding with Ricky in rehab, but the real name was Van Gates. Mr. Gates was 58 years old, on the surface happily married, the father of three and the grandfather of two, and he and his wife owned six jewelry stores in the Dallas area, all located in malls. On paper, they had $2 million, and they'd made it themselves. They had a very nice new home in Highland Park, with separate bedrooms at opposite ends. They met in the kitchen for coffee and in the den for TV and grandkids. Mr. Gates ventured from the closet now and then, always with excruciating caution. No one had a clue. He rented a small box in a post office near one of the malls and used the name Curtis V. Cates. The lavender envelope was addressed to Curtis Cates, and as he sat in his car and carefully opened it, he at first had no idea anything was wrong. Just another sweet letter from his beloved Ricky. Lightning hit, though, with the first words. Dear Van Gates, the party's over, pal. My name ain't Ricky, and you're not Curtis. I'm not a gay boy looking for love. You, however, have an awful secret, which I'm sure you want to keep. I want to help. Here's the deal. Wire $100,000 to Geneva Trust Bank, Nassau, Bahamas for Boomer Realty Limited. Do so immediately. This is not a joke. It's a scam. And you've been hooked. If the money is not received within 10 days, I will send to your wife, Miss Glenda Gates, a little packet filled with copies of all letters, photos, etc. Wire the money, and I'll simply go away. Love, Ricky. With time, Van found the I-635 loop around Dallas, and before long he was driving at exactly 55 in the right-hand lane, oblivious to the traffic stacked up behind him. The Ricky he'd come to love needed the loving embrace of an older man, and Curtis/Van had been making plans for months. The ploy of a diamond show in Orlando while his wife was in El Paso at her sister's. He'd sweated the details and left no tracks. Van shed tears without shame or embarrassment and vowed revenge like any jilted lover. He'd tracked down this beast, this monster who'd posed as Ricky and broken his heart. When the sobbing began to subside, he thought of his wife and family, and that helped greatly in drying up the tears. She'd get all six stores, and the $2 million, and the new house, and he would get nothing but ridicule and scorn and gossip in a town that loved it so. His children would follow the money, and for the rest of their lives, his grandchildren would hear the whispers about their grandfather. He read the letter again as 18-wheelers roared past. For a man who'd carefully lived a double life, the money would not be insurmountable. He had boxes of cash, shoeboxes neatly stacked in a fireproof safe in a mini storage out in Plano. Post-divorce cash. Cash for the afterlife when he and Ricky would sail the world and spend it all on one endless voyage. Son of a bitch, he said through gritted teeth. Why not write this con man and plead poverty? Or threaten to expose his little extortion scheme. Why not fight back? Because the son of a bitch knew exactly what he was doing. He had tracked Van well enough to learn his real name and the name of his wife. He knew Van had the money.